Good morning. The PSNI has apologised for failing to disclose secret files about the UDA murder of five people on the Ormo Road. That's one way of headlining this story. The other way is, did the Police Service of Northern Ireland hide, cover up files that they should have handed over? They say that they didn't realise, they didn't search a computer good enough, that they weren't too sure where these files were at the time. Police Ombudsman Michael McGuire said his investigators have identified significant sensitive information, some of which relates to covert policing, held by police but not made available to his staff. It's funny that, isn't it? Covert policing, and the police just don't happen to come across the information. The Police Ombudsman Michael McGuire is with me this morning. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. What do these files relate to?
Well, I don't want to go into too much detail, Stephen, because the information that we've seen has identified new lines of inquiry, and it's not appropriate really to go into the kind of issues that we're going to be dealing with. But in broad terms, what we've said to families that it relates to sensitive intelligence material and some material in relation to covert policing.
Could that, does anything in those files suggest that there was an opportunity to stop that massacre?
As I say, Stephen, I'm not going to go into the detail because this is about now taking that information and dealing with it in the context of further lines of inquiry, and any investigation wouldn't signal what those issues are at this stage.
But I let me push you one more time and then I'll move on to the next question. But I guess this is also about confidence, isn't it, in the public's confidence in not just the police, but civic society. And if there is a question around whether there was to be a mass shooting and if what the police did or didn't know about that at the time, are we in that territory?
I'm not going to go into that space, but you've hit the nail on the head in terms of confidence, because that's why there's a Police Ombudsman's Office. It's one of the more robust civilian oversight bodies in the world, and we have had access to that material, and we will make decisions about where those lines of inquiry are. Now, what I've said in the context of the statement that we released was that it's not enough for me to say something happened. It's not enough for the police to say something happened. What I've asked the DOJ to do, the Department of Justice, is to commission an independent review of the disclosure issues within the police. And that then will be a basis upon which we can make decisions about moving forward. But there's two separate issues here. There's a public confidence issue in relation to what happened, why it happened, and what we do about it. And then there's a set of issues concerning my investigative steps, and that I'm not going to go into detail on.
Yeah. Do the families know?
No. Because it's not appropriate for me to tell families. What the assurance I've given families...
It wouldn't harm any investigation, Michael, to give the public a broad sense of what was in these files, because if you don't, then the question all day long is, how important is this?
Well, it's important enough for me to say to families that a report that I was going to give them is not now available. And we've got to remember that that's one of the big impacts of all of this. I was very close to publishing reports. My tenure of office finishes in June and July. I was very close to publishing reports. And families had an expectation that they were going to get a report on investigations that have been going on for some years. So it's hugely disappointing for me. But my reaction is neither here nor there compared to the impact that this had on families who've been waiting many years. So that's not an issue to be taken lightly. So all I can say is that the information that we saw was serious enough and significant enough for me to say to families, look, we need to pause here. I need to do some further investigative work. And unfortunately, I cannot give you the report that you were expecting.
That's going to be deeply disturbing to those families, now not knowing if their loved one could have survived.
Well,
have been protected by the state.
The nature of the investigative issues that we address are well known in the context of what the police knew, what they did about it, what was the nature of the investigation, what was the follow-up. All of those kinds of issues cut across the substance of what the Ombudsman's Office does in relation to the legacy work. So the families will be well aware of the kind of issues that we're investigating. I think at this stage, and I have to say they've reacted with huge dignity in the context of the message that they've been told, was to say, well, look, can you allow us a bit more time based on this information that we've received to do some further investigative steps? But they know, and indeed were understanding, that I couldn't go into detail about what that was.
This is also about confidence in the system, including the Public Ombudsman Office. Are you embarrassed that you weren't able to get these files and a team of solicitors were?
Well, first of all, that's not the case. The team of solicitors didn't get them. We, because of the nature of the liaison we have with families, which means good communication, we became aware that the Sean Graham families had engaged in civil litigation with the police and that there was a substantial amount of material available. On the back of that, my investigators did a line-by-line forensic search of that material and compared it with what we had already received from the police in the context of what we've asked for.
Of the material that the solicitors had?
Well, and the material that the police solicitors had, the family solicitors have not received any of this material because it's sensitive intelligence material. So I got access to that. We went through it and we compared that with what we already knew. The issue is for the police, I have to say, because we put inquiries into the police. That's the nature of the way which this business is done. And we'd been assured in the past that the systems had, all police systems had been looked at. So when we found that this wasn't the case, that did give me some cause for concern.
And do you think the police would have ever handed this information over if you hadn't have gone through it line by line?
Well, I suppose part of the police response was, well, look, we did collect it because we collected it for the civil litigation, but we didn't collect it for the Ombudsman.
And that's my point.
Yeah. Well, they didn't tell us they had it. We had to go and look at this material and go through it line by line to determine what it was and compare it with what we had. So I was disappointed and I'd said to the chief that they should have told us whenever they knew that they had it, but they didn't do that.
And why didn't they?
Well, that's for the police to answer. I think, as I understand it...
What's the chief constable told you?
Well, as I understand it, this arose because of, putting it basically, the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing. There was two investigative teams, one pulling together material for civil litigation, one pulling material together for us.
Do you believe
and
them?
And they didn't talk to each other. I have no evidence to suggest that there was anything else. But what I believe and what the police say, as what I've said yesterday, is neither here nor there, because what we need is an independent assessment of what happened, and that then will provide a basis upon moving forward.
So some type of thug or criminal who the police come across every day of the week, and they're interviewed by the police, and when they're caught out lying, they say to the police, "I forgot to tell you that," or I got that bit wrong, let me change my story. Can you see where I'm going with this?
I can, and all I'd say to you is if I had any sense that there were issues like that in relation to this, I would call myself in to either a criminal or a misconduct investigation. I'm not doing that because that is not the basis upon which...
I'm not talking about you.
No, but I am talking about it in the context of the police.
I'm talking about for those people who doubted the police, who doubted the integrity of the police, and they now hear the police saying, "Oh, we're sorry," and they say this was down to human error. The sheer volume of the material involved, the limitations of the archaic IT systems. Yeah. So let's compare that to some type of, you know, any criminal that walks through the police door any day of the week, is dragged through the police door any day of the week and is sitting there being interviewed. "Oh, I forgot about that. Let me just change that story a second." How can we have confidence in the police if they're doing this?
Well, I think the issue of public confidence is the right one to be raising, because in the context of what I say about this, in the context of what the police say about this, what I want to see is an independent review. I want to see an assessment of why we are, what has happened. But more importantly, Stephen, and this is a subject you and I have talked about before, this gets to the heart of how we deal with legacy. Because disclosure issues for the Ombudsman's Office, there have also been disclosure issues in relation to coroner service, to public inquiries, to the Lord Chief Justice and so on, and what they're doing. So this is a much potentially an issue which has greater consequences. And that's why I think that this is an opportunity. If there's anything positive to come out of this, and this is a hard sell to families, I have to say, but if there's anything positive to come out of this, it's the fact that we may use this now as an opportunity to once and for all sort out how we deal with our very complex legacy issues, because the way in which we're doing it isn't working.
Final question. Can you rule out there's been a cover-up?
I have absolutely no information to suggest that that's the case. Should there be any inclination that that's the case, I will clearly do something about it. But I'm happy at this stage to take the police in terms of the assertions that they made in terms of what's wrong. I said that's absolutely fine.
Why are you happy? Why do you believe
them? Because I understand the complexity of what they're dealing with. I understand that there are 44 million pages of documents. I understand that there are computer systems that don't talk to each other. And in the absence of anything else, why would I not? So the issue is in relation to having said that, let's understand in greater detail what it is, what happened, why it happened, and then we'll decide what we want to do.
We really appreciate you coming in, Michael. Thank you very much indeed. You're welcome. Good morning. Well, listening to that is the Deputy Chief Constable, Stephen Martin. Stephen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, you know, your force has said sorry. How can we believe you?
Well, we are sorry. I repeat that again this morning. I said it a number of times yesterday. We recognise that our mistake on this occasion has a significant impact on the families concerned, on Dr. McGuire's investigation. And, of course, it has an impact on people's confidence in us to do our job. And first and foremost, for the impact on the families, we're deeply and sincerely sorry. There was nothing willful. Nothing deliberate. It was a mistake. It was a mistake made a number of years ago. It only came to light last year.
And it's a coincidence, Deputy Chief Constable, that your force's mistake was around your covert operations. That's one hell of a coincidence.
No, I don't think it is. And you know, every day of the week, we are disclosing material relating to covert operations. If you had asked Dr. McGuire, you know, has he accessed intelligence about CHIS, about surveillance, about full access to all the material that we believed and understood was available, I have no doubt he would say the answer to that question is yes. So we're revealing information about covert policing to lawyers in civil litigation, to the Ombudsman, all the time. Obviously, there are legal safeguards that apply to that. But actually, we disclose information of that nature on a frequent basis.
Can you give us a sense as to what this information pertained to?
Well, I heard you try to draw the Ombudsman on that matter, and he refused to be drawn. And regrettably, I know you would like me to, but I can't. The information is now in the hands of the Ombudsman. He has a live investigation, and it would be entirely inappropriate for me to in any way comment on that, as it might intrude on his investigation.
You will have heard, Stephen, the analogy that I was drawing with the police ombudsman when I was saying, look, when the PSNI are interviewing criminals and they say, we forgot, we've got a busy life. I forgot about that little fact I didn't tell you. Okay, I can't find that. Is this not deeply embarrassing that we are supposed to respect and believe in what the police tell us? And when the police tell us there's no information to hand over, that we shouldn't be second-guessing that? Is there a pile of information that you just can't find?
Well, look, of course this is embarrassing. Any professional organisation would be embarrassed by this, and we're sorry about it. But there is a difference between a mistake. A mistake in the midst of lots and lots and lots of other good work.
But how do we know this was a mistake and not a cover-up? How do we know?
Well, there is absolutely no suggestion that there was anything deliberate in this.
Because you're telling us. Because you're telling us. And you told the Ombudsman before there was no more material. Once bitten, twice shy. How can we believe you?
Well, what I would say to you is every day we're disclosing material. We're disclosing material to the police ombudsman. We're disclosing material for the coroner's courts. We're disclosing material for, we have something like over 900 separate civil litigation actions against us.
But are you disclosing all of it?
Well, we're disclosing everything that we know about that's relevant. We believe we're doing a professional and good job. But is it possible, as in this occasion, that on occasion we make a mistake? Of course that's possible. But you've got to understand the scale of the problem here. And, you know, give me a minute to explain this. We have the Patton Report, 20 years ago this September, published. It was silent on investigations into the past. It was a blueprint for the PSNI. It said the type of new organisation, the new beginning to policing, it called itself. It didn't envisage this investigation in the past. No one saw it coming. It has organically grown over the last 20 years. And our current chief constable, in his first few months, stood up and said, very publicly in a public statement, we are not equipped to investigate the past. We don't have the resources. We don't have the right IT system.
This isn't about... This is not about...
With respect, it is, Stephen.
Well...
Because there are tens of millions of separate records. Some set on paper, some on microfiche, some on IT platforms. We have systems that are so old, we're down to now two terminals. We're having to cannibalize other terminals to keep them going. We have other systems that have no search records, you know, searchable systems. We have none of the systems talk to each other. All these legacy systems. Of course, the stuff we're recording today is entirely different. We're taking advantage of the IT systems today. We've looked about how we can convert all this material onto one system.
Okay.
But up to this point, the IT capability isn't there. We keep scanning for it. And if that comes up, of course, we'll do it.
So I hear that. So again, in terms of public confidence in the PSNI, can you explain to me, because this information was held in the same archaic systems, according to the police then, as it was now when it was discovered. So can you tell me how it was discovered now and it wasn't discovered then? What changed?
Well, it is actually reasonably simple to describe. It is regrettably embarrassing to a point, but whenever the disclosure exercise was conducted for Dr. McGuire's investigation a number of years ago, this material was not discovered. A number of years later...
How was it not discovered?
Let me finish my point. A number of years later, the families engaged in civil litigation. Another team of people started the disclosure for that civil litigation and discovered this material. They didn't hide it. They didn't conceal it. They withdrew it. They collected it. And they put it on a schedule available to the court. The lawyers who...
Sorry, Stephen, but I just want to understand the basics around this. When you say they discovered it... So did they discover, literally, a file? Was all of the information in one file? Or did
Where was it? This is in separate places. So let me give you an example. So one of the search parameters was, I don't mean to be technical here, but one of the search parameters was for a weapon called a VZ-58. When a certain system is searched for a VZ-58, it doesn't actually recover anything. The officer who was doing it for the civil litigation, because that officer had 33 years policing experience and had spent a long time in the disclosure world, said, I know that sometimes people refer to VZ-58s as AK-47s. So he put AK-47 in the search system, and he actually hit on the documents, and he recovered them. The officer who had done the search years earlier didn't take that step because he didn't know to take that step, because he didn't have the same breadth and extent of experience. We obviously train our people, we try and give them, but that is an experiential step.
And if someone who went in, and if some thug or paramilitary had gone in and murdered someone with an AK-47 and was being interviewed by you, and you said, did you kill someone with a gun? And he danced around what type of gun it was. Would you believe him?
Stephen,
that's not
an analogy here. We're talking about disclosure in sophisticated criminal proceedings, and you're bringing it down to us interviewing, as you would call them, a thug.
I am.
A term I wouldn't use. I'm telling you what happened. And, you know, we have been saying for years, the chief constable in his first few months put his hand up, publicly said, take this burden off us because we're not equipped for it. The systems aren't right. We need lots of investment. And actually, the perception of the public would be enhanced around policing confidence if we were not playing this role in investigating the past. The politicians understood that argument, and in a Stormont House agreement, they agreed that there would be historical inquiries.
Okay.
For the last few years, we've been looking forward to this burden being taken off us. It hasn't happened. So the important thing is that as of this, because of this mistake, and because we recognise the impact this has on families, the impact it has on public confidence, we're now saying to the Ombudsman, don't get us to do this disclosure for you anymore. We will give you free and unfettered access to all the systems. We'll work with them now. We'll try and help them. We'll try and marshal the stuff. We'll try and educate his people. We'll try and give them every assistance. But let him start.
Okay, just a couple of more questions.
With his properly vetted staff, and he can make a decision. Surely that must be good for public confidence and the confidence of the family.
How much experience did the officer have who initially did the search and missed this?
I'm not going to bring this down to individuals, Stephen.
You have done, because... No, sorry, hold on a moment. You have done when it suited you, because you told me the officer who spotted this had 30-odd years experience. Yes. So you brought it down to that.
So how much experience did the officer have initially?
It's an important question, because it's relevant, because you set the parameter.
Well, Stephen, it might be a question you want to ask. It's not a question I'm going to answer.
Why wouldn't you?
Because this is an organisational failing.
But you're supposed to be transparent with the public. Was it an officer who had 1 year's experience? The implication that you've made is that that officer who did the initial investigation had less experience.
Well, I
is that true?
Of course they had less experience. There are literally now, you've got to understand, Stephen, 4 out of every 5 serving officers now had no RUC experience. 4 out of every 5 serving officers now are PSNI only officers. So when I talk about someone with 33 years service, they are, you know, in the probably the top 60 or 70 left serving officers in terms of seniority. So of course the other team had less experience. But this was an organizational failing. There's no sense that anybody has done anything deliberately wrong here. This was a mistake. Every day those same people are disclosing materials, searching systems, servicing requests from the coroners and the courts. And actually in the last few months, we've had positive judicial comments about the quality and timeliness of our disclosure, because we have put significant effort into this over the years. Whilst calling for an external independent body to take this responsibility off us, we have invested, this current chief constable has invested in this. We have dozens of officers taking on contemporary policing to service this industry.
Okay, and I have one final question, and I promise, and we appreciate your time this morning. Okay. You've said to me this morning that the AK-47 search found further disclosure, okay? That initially, and help me if I'm getting this right.
In that one particular system.
Sure.
Yes.
That initially a previous search for the V258 had not recovered this, but that when the officer with 30-odd years experience put AK-47 in, that revealed further information, correct?
Yeah, but what I want to say is...
Hold on, just on that.
One simple illustration of one item.
I get that.
And please remember, the Ombudsman's not saying that nothing was disclosed. We disclosed a sizable amount of material to him for his investigation.
Okay, but on that...
And what was not disclosed, whilst important to him, is small in terms of the overall quantity of...
Okay, and that is my final question. When you find the information about the AK-47... why did you not disclose it to the police ombudsman?
Because we didn't realise at that point that we hadn't disclosed it. So this was an exercise. If you heard the ombudsman, he said that a solicitor had told him, look, there's a lot of material is being prepared for disclosure in civil litigation. You might want to check that you've seen it all. He had to go down with an inventory of everything that had previously been disclosed and literally check it off box by box. Have I seen that before?
Why didn't your force do that?
Because we didn't realise the connection between that litigation several years after a disclosure exercise by another part of the organisation.
We're to believe that too. So a mistake was made by an officer. You won't tell us how much experience he had. Then when you put your experienced officer put in a different search term, you didn't realise there was new information. And it took a different process and different people to realise.
Well,
and we're supposed to trust you.
Well, Stephen, we're talking about an exercise that's done every day here by multiple people in various parts of our organisation, servicing different coronial systems, civil litigation, and high court, criminal trials, police ombudsman investigations. And if you did something 5 or 6 years ago and a colleague of yours did a similar exercise 5 or 6 years later, and you were unaware, and they were unaware that there was a disparity of a number of documents within over 30 cases of material, I don't think you would realise. And I actually think, I know the way you're trying to paint it as if it's unbelievable, but actually, if you think about it, it is highly logistically believable. But we're sorry for it, and that's why, recognising the impact it can have on public confidence, we're inviting the Ombudsman now to come in with our assistance and have free and unfettered access to all these legacy systems. And surely, for public confidence in the important accountability role that the Ombudsman plays, that's a good step. And also, he's called for a review. We welcome that review. We'll work with that review. It will tell us that our systems are archaic. It will tell us that there's so much material. It will tell us some things we want to know. But maybe what it will do is get the political and governmental and other support behind us to actually take this burden off us and get this historical inquiries unit set up.
Deputy Chief Constable, thank you very much indeed. Good morning to you. So, as you've been hearing this morning, the PSNI has apologised for failing to disclose secret files about the UDA murder of five people on the Ormo Road. We'll take your calls on this morning, 03030 80 55 55. This listener, Niall Murphy, represents the relatives of those murdered. Do you believe the police that this was a mistake, Mr Murphy, or do you think this was a cover-up?
The families do not believe that this is a mistake. Regrettably, they fear that this is actually a policy which is designed to ensure that Dr. Maguire does not publish his reports. He has only 5 months left of his statutory tenure. He cannot be extended beyond July, and the meeting yesterday to be advised that previous promises which were given in good faith by Dr. Maguire could not now be honoured was devastating. The families feel that 20 years after the Good Friday Agreement, there are unfortunately dark forces who are trying to undermine the Police Ombudsman's office.
Well, those dark forces wouldn't be very sophisticated, and it wouldn't be a very good cover-up if the police collected the information eventually.
Well, perhaps they have achieved their ambition.
To be fair to them, that's what they did.
That's their account. But another analysis might be that they've achieved their ambition that Dr. Maguire will not publish another report. The circumstances that give rise to this bear to be considered perhaps more closely. I have listened intently to the accountant with regards to the complex disclosure obligations from the Assistant Chief Constable, but it should be borne in mind that those are legal obligations. They're not simply duties that he is attempting to fulfil. They are duties that must be fulfilled, and they are duties which are imposed upon every Chief Constable in this jurisdiction. And with regards to the...
So what are you saying?
Well, with regards to the civil litigation, the families instructed me to pursue applications against the Chief Constable, the Ministry of Defence, for their supervision and resourcement of this arms importation in 1988, and also against the Secretary of State for the role of the security services. We know from the Loughlin Island report that was published in 2016 that there was a covert policing operation with regards to this importation that came from South Africa. I suspect that the material that has been withheld from the Police Ombudsman relates to that covert policing operation around this importation. That importation, VZ-58 weapons as a specific species, had never been in this jurisdiction before, ever. They would then go on to kill over 70 people. The arms importation that had Browning handguns, grenades, rocket-propelled launchers, would go on to kill almost 229 people.
And you heard
this is the most serious of issues. This is not civil disclosure in a row in a police station. This is the most serious of allegations that can be made, and that this material was withheld from an oversight body that was incepted to give police or to give
or
confidence in policing.
Well, and the Police Ombudsman is saying he has no evidence whatsoever to suggest a cover-up. None.
The circumstances precisely which give rise to the recovery of this sensitive documentation arises from civil litigation. So in the civil litigation, there were two schedules of disclosure which were prepared. Non-sensitive, which was disclosed to myself, and sensitive, which is where the dark secrets are going to be held. Now, through good family liaison with the Ombudsman's office, I ensured that investigators were aware of the sensitive schedule. I haven't seen the sensitive schedule, nor ever will, because the police chief constable is hiding in secret courts. He is instructing his lawyers.
Well, he would deny that, wouldn't
he? It's a fact. I'm saying it as a fact. You know, you can bring the assistant chief constable back on. As a fact, they are hiding in secret courts and are making application for a closed material procedure which will exclude me and exclude the barristers that I instruct from physical attendance at the court.
But this doesn't, it does not stack up, Niall, that if the police service were intent in covering up material, it does not stack up that they would collate it this time?
You actually...
They gathered the material.
But you actually...
You didn't find it.
No.
The police ombudsman didn't find it. The police found it.
But you hit the nail on the head when you asked the assistant chief constable, when you did find it, why did you not disclose it to the police ombudsman? That would have been his duty. It was recovered for the purposes of civil litigation. The duties of the chief constable as a defendant to a High Court judge are much more compelling than that to a police ombudsman, in my respectful position. He prepared a schedule of sensitive information for the purposes of the High Court. That is true, and that does discharge his legal obligations in that regard. But he had not disclosed that information to the police ombudsman. When I advised the police ombudsman's investigators to ensure that they had had access to all of that information, the police ombudsman, having told the families that he was satisfied that he had seen everything that was relevant to the bookmaker's atrocity, it appeared that it wasn't, and that there was sensitive material that does give rise to further leads for investigation that had not been disclosed. That's a disgrace.
And have you confidence that those leads now will be investigated properly and thoroughly?
I do, but it is regrettable that it has taken so many years into this process for this to become apparent. Families have seen special branch officers who refuse to speak to the police ombudsman attempt then to undermine the police ombudsman's statutory powers. They have had to listen this week even to former special branch officers in their vain attempts to defend the indefensible, the truth of collusion. They have seen the police arrest two journalists for having the temerity to expose the truth, and the families fear that this all comes from the same source.
Well, the families may fear that, but of course the police would say, in terms of arrests that they do, that they're working within the law, wouldn't they? How do you know this is not cock-up over conspiracy? Again, the police say they never sought to deliberately withhold the information. And you heard again the Deputy Chief Constable talking about millions of documents, the archaic IT systems that they're working with, the sheer volume of the material involved.
Yeah, well, cock-up or conspiracy, a maelstrom of incompetence versus Machiavellian deceit, either are not good enough. Either does not inspire...
Yeah, but there's a big difference between one and the other.
But they're not good enough. And that there was a convention of the policing board last week, all of this information was known to both parties, both the police ombudsman and both the senior command of the PSNI before Christmas. This should have been a matter discussed at the policing board last week, and it wasn't. And I respectfully consider that there should be an urgent convention of the policing board to consider this as a single item agenda. I think the Irish government require to ensure that their superintendents as co-guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement, the Good Friday Agreement being the organ which gives rise to the new policing structures, to ensure that they are satisfied that the mistakes that have happened, and I couch that deftly, satisfy their obligations as co-guarantors of our peace process.
How many files are we talking about here? Do you know?
Yeah, I do know there are 30 lever arch folders. I don't know how many pages are in a lever arch folder. There could be 10, but as a rule of thumb...
That's the extra stuff.
There are usually 450. So 30 by 450 pages could be 13,500 pages. And this is sensitive material. In disclosure, we received perhaps 7,000 or 8,000 pages of non-sensitive material. So there is more sensitive than non-sensitive, and it is the non-sensitive that the chief constable, or that the police ombudsman rather, did not see.
Okay, so let me get this into my head. There are 30
lever arch folders
of sensitive material, so sensitive that it's now leading to new investigations.
Yes.
Have the family any sense? Have they been given any guide whatsoever as to what is in those files?
My well-educated summation is that that relates to a covert policing operation around the arms importation that was first discovered on the 8th of January 1988 at Mahon Road, Portadown, which was the first introduction of the VZ-58.
Have you been told that, or why are you saying that?
It's in the police ombudsman's press release. However, triangulating the sentence with what we know from chapter 4, 40 pages in the 2016 Loughon Island report, That's what that means. In my respectful view, and I would be open to anybody attempting to correct that.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Good morning.